The void and entering into it. In 650 AD, Patanjali wrote a little book called the Yoga Sutras, in which he described the void or transcendence and how to enter into it. This is a very short summary of his eight limbs of yoga. He said yoga is the cessation of mental activity and is accompanied by, we'll just read down this, yama. When you're going to enter the void, you probably want to stop doing some things, which means there's probably some things that you'd want to stop doing, like if you were doing things that caused you to spin on them, like if you were doing behaviors that were not good for you or doing like things that would pull you out of the void would be like maybe worrying about bills and concerns about earthly affairs. So when you're thinking of entering the void, you'd probably want to stop thinking about all of those types of things. Niyama, and there are some things that you would probably want to do in order to preclude any interruptions from inside or outside. So if you're going to go into the void, you might want to turn off the cell phones, beepers, things like that. Maybe go into a room where you'd be quiet and undisturbed. And then asanam. Then you would probably want to sit down, since if you were to really enter the void standing up, you'd probably fall over. Make the seat comfortable. So you'd want to be comfortable. Pranayam, you may want to do a breathing technique to calm the mind, but know that when you enter the void, the breathing will probably cease anyway. Pratyahara, and now turn the senses, which are normally turned outward, inward. Withdraw the senses from the outside and turn them to the inside. Dharana, focus on something inside and put all of your attention on it. The attention should be one-pointed but gentle and not hard concentration. This is like meditation. When we think of transcendental meditation, the purpose of transcendental meditation, when they give you a mantra, that's a word that you say over and over, it's a meaningless word, the focus is on the word, but where the focus really wants to end up is on the space between the words. So like you've heard the word om before, people say om over and over and over again. Where they really are looking to get their thought is to slip in the gap in the space between the words. So what om does is it causes your mind to focus on that rather than all the external worldly affairs and so on and so forth, turns you inward, and then the goal is to slip into the gap, the space between the words. That's the void, into that space of thoughtlessness, where therein lies the oneness with everything, and that's the void, that space where there's no thought. And some of you may have found that on some of the exercises we did with quantum linguistics that for a moment you slipped into that space of no thought, where perhaps somebody asked you a question that was unanswerable or went beyond your mode of comprehension for the moment, and you just went, what? That's that void space right there. Yeah. So it says focus on something inside. There's different things you could focus on if you were doing meditation with this. You could use a mantra. You could also meditate on the light within. There's other types of meditations that you could do. Dhyana, as you totally focus on the object of your attention, notice that the awareness begins to expand outward. Let it go outward as far as it will go. That's like focusing on falling into that space between the space between the words. And samadhi, when it expands to infinity, you are in the void. There's a moment of suspension or no thoughts and no object of consciousness, as if there were consciousness itself, with nothing that you were conscious of. The last three are called sanyama and involve taking something into the void. At the deepest level of mind, just before samadhi, there's a place called rityambara pragyam, that place which knows only truth, which is similar to the Hawaiian io. So what happens is when you go into the void, or if you take something into the void, people are going, what? Welcome. Io. Io is the Hawaiian for the void. So when you take something into the void, that's the place that knows only truth. That's like the quantum space between the space. That's why essentially what we're doing also when we go into expanded awareness is we're taking things, if we take a problem into that space, we're going into the space between the space and dropping it into the void. There's actually processes that I learned while in Hawaii for various processes for bringing a problem, something that's a problem, up into the void and coming back down with your answers. In fact, one of the things that I remember one time when I was having a lot of challenges with my business, I had no idea what I was going to do about this or that, and I was tossing it around in my mind, and I was so hurried that I couldn't come up to my solutions. So then what I did was I started meditating for an hour every day. And when I meditated for an hour every day, it was in that space, in the silence, in the space between the space, that the solutions popped up just like that. I know. So it was in that silence, it was in the space between the space, when I actually allowed myself to go into that void, that I found my connection to all the resources. Because remember, we talked about before that if the human nervous system is holographic in nature, and the part is in the part, and the whole, and the all of the information of the whole is in the part, and the part is in the whole, then that means that all the infinite resources, that means that whatever you think you are at any given moment, you're always more than that. That's the first thing it means. It also means that all that we have at our disposal, all the resources of the known universe, if we can just tap into that. So that's where meditation becomes beneficial. And that also some of the processes that we're doing in quantum linguistics are going to take people and drop them into that void space, that place of no thought. So we can take people there much quicker than even the meditation through our language and through some of the patterns that we use. And that's what the void really is. So let's take a look at, it's our connection to everything. So if you were to think of the conscious mind, you've heard we only use 10% of our mind. Let's think of the conscious mind as being that 10%. Let's think of the unconscious mind as being 90%, so we've got 100% there. Now, you have thoughts, and your thoughts rise up from someplace. And what happens is your thoughts probably come from the void, from this absolute pure consciousness. But then as they come up from that void or absolute pure consciousness, they come more into your unconscious, to the unconscious level, you begin to own them a little bit more. And then they move from the unconscious mind into the conscious mind. Now there's a place here beyond the thoughts, which would be absolute true pure consciousness. And that would be the void. That's that space that we go into when somebody asks us a quantum linguistics question and it's like, and all thought stops for a moment. It's like, that's the place that when you meditate, that's the place that you look to get to when you're focusing on the space between the words. That's that same place. And once we drop into the void, that place is known as the place that which knows only truth. That's what the Hawaiians call Io, the place that knows only truth. And when you go there, what happens is we get not just confusion, because it brings us out of this realm, sends us into this realm, and when we come back out, we can come back out with the truth in relationship to that issue when we drop something into the void. Now, the first exercise that we did, the first thing that we talked about, and we talked about this just a little while ago, was, hold on one second. Can I get a copy of that? I don't know if I can print these out. If I can, I will. What we're going to do is we're going to turn back to the expanded awareness page and take a look at dropping things into the void and how that would work. So let's turn now back to page 419. It says using neurological drivers, advanced modalities using neurological drivers. So neurological drivers are primary subjective distinctions which are directly hardwired to the nervous system. Peripheral vision has certain characteristics through its set of neurological drivers. Foveal vision is tunnel, sympathetic arousal, and detailed. So that's right here. This would be foveal vision. That's where you've heard the term tunnel vision. That's where we're looking just at the spot, or we're looking at just what's in front of us. Whereas peripheral vision is panoramic, parasympathetic arousal, and contextual. That's right there on our slide. Panoramic, parasympathetic arousal, and contextual. In the ancient system of the samurai, the state that occurred when entering into peripheral vision was called expanded awareness, and was highly prized as a state that allowed the samurai to achieve centered calmness. The process consisted of learning how to enter into a deep trance while maintaining a heightened external awareness. So the exercise is what we call changing perspective. What we're going to have you do is identify a problem, context and/or object of reference. So we're going to find out what the problem is. It could have to do with a person or have to do with something. I think one of the most effective ways to use this particular exercise is if it's a problem that relates to another individual. Like if you have a problem in your life that relates to somebody else, this would be a good problem for this. What you do is you're going to teach the client peripheral vision. So when we break into groups of two or three or whatever it is that we do, you're going to teach the client peripheral vision. So you're going to have them focus gazed. They're going to find a spot on the wall above eye level and pour all their attention and their awareness onto that. Then they're going to expand the awareness to the periphery. They'll go into peripheral vision. You may notice that their jaw loosens and you'll calibrate to a physiological shift. The physiological shift should signal to you that they're shifting from sympathetic to parasympathetic functioning, which could include a flushing of the skin. It's like a relaxed state. So when you notice that, okay, there's been a shift as they're now in expanded awareness, you go, okay. Then what you're going to do is anchor peripheral vision. You could just, once they're in that peripheral vision, perhaps you could anchor them by touching their leg in a certain place, just placing, you know, doing some sort of an anchor there, or you could touch them on the arm to anchor that state of peripheral vision. It then says, step four, associate client to problem context and fire peripheral vision anchor. So you tell them, think about that problem. You're going to fire the vision peripheral vision anchor, and while they're thinking about that problem, you're going to have them go back into peripheral vision while firing the anchor. Step five is condition 3 to 5 times, so then you'll have them break state each time. So you'll do the same thing. You'll have them think of the problem, go into peripheral vision while you're firing the anchor. Break state. Think of the problem, fire the peripheral vision anchor, have them go back into peripheral vision while thinking of the problem. Do that 3 to 5 times. What that does is blows out the neurological drivers on the problem state. Then once you've done that, you're going to have them do what we call perceptual positions. You're going to have them think of the problem from their own perception while in peripheral vision. Then you're going to break state, and you're going to have them take a different perceptual position. You're going to have them imagine floating up out of their body and into the body of the other person and to look at the issue from the other person's eyes and then fire your peripheral vision anchor. Then you're going to have them float outside of the body of that other person to a third-party position where they're observing, the observer position, where they're watching the interaction between you and that other person. So you'll be imagining taking a meta perspective on the problem, watching the interaction between you and the other person while firing off the peripheral vision anchor. That's in the other? Then you're going to future pace. That's in the meta position. Okay, so I'll say it again. Identify the problem. That's the first thing. This works particularly well in problems that involve another person, with problems that involve another person. Once you've identified the problem, then you're going to teach the client peripheral vision. Okay, you'll have them find a spot above the wall, on the wall, somewhere above eye level. Have them focus all their attention and awareness on the spot. Then have their vision begin to expand outward into the peripheral. Once they're in the peripheral, you're going to notice and you're going to calibrate for the physiological shift. You may see their jaw loosen. You may notice a shifting in color from lighter to darker, which would indicate that they're shifting from sympathetic to parasympathetic functioning. Then what you're going to do is you're going to anchor that peripheral vision. You can do that by simply touching their arm in some way when they're inside that anchor, when they're inside that state. Step four, associate client to problem context and fire peripheral vision anchor. You may want to make a little note next to that, step four, put have the client reaccess peripheral vision. So when you anchor them, when you refire off that peripheral vision anchor, they should go right back into peripheral vision. Reaccess. Then you're going to condition 3 to 5 times, and you're going to break state each time. So you're going to do the same thing again. So you say associate to the problem, think about the problem, go back into peripheral vision, and you fire your peripheral vision anchor. Break state. Have them do it again. Think about the problem again, go back into peripheral vision. Break state. Do it again and again and again and again. Three to five times.
Anchor it and then break state.
Yeah. I'll demonstrate it so you guys can see. Then you're going to do perceptual positions. This is your ecology check. What you're going to do is you're going to have them think of the problem from their own perspective in peripheral vision. Actually, the second two you don't have to do in peripheral vision. You can make a little note there. Self, do in peripheral vision. Other, an observer. They don't need to be in peripheral vision. All they need to do is float up out of their body for part B of step six, float up out of their body and float down into the body of the other person with whom this issue is, and have them imagine looking at things from that other person's perspective.
That's in
step three. Step 6B.
Now, it has to be an obvious issue. What if it's something that I feel is equivalent?
That's fine.
It's an issue, when it's actually not an issue.
Right. Then, well, if it's not a problem, it's not a problem. Then step C of six, 6C, step 6C, then you're going to float up out of the other person's body, and you're going to have the client look at the issue from a third-party perspective, a meta person or observer perspective, while looking down at the interaction between both parties. Then you're going to have them come back down into their own body. And before your future pace, you may want to put a little step, put test. Test and then future pace. You guys want to see what this looks like? It's fun. And this is we're just starting to have some fun. So this is just experimenting with the process of...